Okay, some of you who've been following the news will be aware there is a protest, an ongoing protest in Dublin's Dame Street called Occupy, flying under the banner of Occupy Dame Street, and probably it parallels the Occupy Wall Street demonstration where it all began. On the line I have Paul Murphy, who's a Socialist Party MEP, and he's just going to talk to us a little bit about the Occupy Dame Street. Paul, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having me on.
Not at all. And tell me, Paul, if you care for our listeners, just give an outline of what's taking place on Dame Street, the whys and wherefores, etc.
What's taking place on Dame Street, in my opinion, is extremely significant. It is part of now a worldwide movement which consists of over 1,000 occupations across the world. You have perhaps around 70 people, something, overnight, staying overnight in Dame Street Occupy.
Okay.
But then also on Saturday, there was a demonstration in support of Occupy Dame Street, because the idea is that this movement isn't simply confined to those who are able to, stay there full-time, but also others who can support. And almost 1,000 people, I'd say, participated in that demonstration, and then in an open assembly at the end of the demonstration to discuss what way forward for the movement. And the movement, I'm not a representative of Occupy Dame Street. It is a non-political party movement, but obviously with the involvement of people from political parties in it.
Sure.
But it is a movement that is...
It's a grassroots
movement. In Ireland, the key issues that have emerged, opposition to the control of the European Central Bank over monetary policy, opposition to the presence of the IMF and how the IMF is dictating, terms in terms of a savaging of people's living standards here in Ireland, opposition to the fact of us ordinary people being forced to pay for the debts of the private speculators and bankers, and the idea of that the natural resources that exist off the west coast of Ireland in particular should be taken back into public ownership and should be used for the interests of the vast majority of people in society as opposed to the elites. And they're kind of the key demands. But it's broader than that in the sense that it is a movement reflecting people's alienation from the political establishment and really opposition to what's happening, the crisis, and how working class people, young people, pensioners, unemployed people are being forced to pay for this economic crisis.
And tell me, Paul, in your opinion, apart from just providing a platform through which people can express their dissatisfaction and indeed their alienation, as you aptly describe it, what can protests of this nature really hope to achieve? I mean, given that the sort of stranglehold the executive has on Parliament anyway, is it going to be very difficult to get the powers that be to take note and to change direction on foot of, unless the entire population of the country was out? And even then, I sometimes have my doubts.
Sure. I think that's an important point in the sense that I don't think the aim of the movement, by and large, is to persuade the capitalist class and their political representatives in this country to change their mind or change their opinions, because I think in reality they're following their own class interests. That's why we're paying for the crisis and why the rich are still getting richer. But it is an attempt to start a movement that can actually fundamentally change society. And so it's the start of something as opposed to the end of something.
Yeah.
In fact, a key slogan that has been introduced into the movement, I think, is very powerful, is the idea of that we are the 99%. That it's the 1% in society, the ruling class, who decide policy fundamentally, who reap profit, reap rewards, and it's the 99% people who end up paying for that.
The silent majority, as we used to call them.
Exactly. Yeah. The other side of that, it's not just that the 1% has enormous power and how undemocratic it is, but it's also, it gives you a sense of the potential power of the 99%, that we are the ones who fight the wars, we are the ones who produce the products.
Sure.
We are the ones who actually make the system work. And that if that power is harnessed and organized, then there actually is an ability to change. So I think it's the start of something, but it's very important. I mean, what I would argue, what I raised at the assembly at Dame Street on last Saturday, is the idea of trying to link up in particular with the organized labor movement, arguing for the likes of a 24-hour general strike against austerity.
Sure.
That's one of the ways that the 99% gets their power and has the most power, is as workers and our ability to shut down the economy.
And is there much hope, Paul, of that? I'm not trying to be overly negative, but I know at the demonstration, the big, I know it was ICTU organised at that time, the demonstration last November, very large one that it was, when we were facing into all sorts of difficulties in the run into Christmas. Part of that, there were groups calling for a general strike, but nothing came of it. Is there a likelihood that suggestions like that will gain any traction in the near future?
I think we're experiencing at the moment, to be honest, the effects of a complete lack of leadership by ICTU, and in reality misleadership, that when you know, you had 100,000 people on the streets, people were effectively told to go home as opposed to given a strategy to bring the movement forward. Bring
and those leaders
down
were
at that time.
Those leaders were booed at that time too by a substantial part of the crowd.
Yes, yeah, that's true. And it reflected, you know, a movement of opposition and an awareness of the role of a section, an important section of the trade union bureaucracy, which doesn't actually represent the interests of the rank and file. So again, I don't think it'll something that'll be called from above.
Sure.
I think it'll need, you know, to be built real, real pressure from below. But, I mean, one of the very positive features of Occupy Wall Street is that precisely the trade union movement, the labour movement, has now oriented to it, and there is a connection between this movement and the movement can... I found, to be honest, the protest on Saturday very refreshing in terms of the mood and the protest. People's attitudes were very positive, whereas actually recently, because of the situation we've been faced, every protest you go on, people are quite depressed. You know,
it's
depressing.
Yes.
Whereas this has a newness and a freshness to it. I think if we could bring some of that into the trade union movement as well, it can give a certain new life to it. I mean, that's kind of what happened in Greece a couple of months ago when the workers' movement was at a low ebb. You had the development of the Indignados movement, the occupations of the squares, and then that in turn gave a new life to the trade union struggles. And now, I mean, this week, there will be a 48-hour general strike in Greece against austerity, which is partly as a result of that impetus given by the role of particularly young people, but older people too.
Yeah. And are there, you mentioned the, I mean, it is more of an international movement, this. Are there any connections between, say, the Irish Occupy Dame Street and their American equivalents? Or is it too early for that type of those types of links to have been established?
I don't think there are organised connections in the sense of, you know, there is no organisational structure here that organises things on a worldwide basis. There's obviously the act of inspiration, the common tactics being used, and I'm sure there's lots of informal connections via Facebook and so on that people have a connection with each other, because clearly, I mean, it is a worldwide movement at this stage. It doesn't have, you know, a centralized leadership or something like that.
Sure.
You know, in terms of like where decisions are made, decisions aren't being made.
Is that a weakness?
Base at this stage.
Is that a weakness, do you think, Paul? I mean, I know possibly people in the Socialist Party would have perhaps a somewhat different view to what is probably, I suppose, a kind of anarcho-syndicalist approach from the grassroots, you know, where they opt for a lack of leaders and, you know, there's no centralised control, etc. But I sometimes wonder, does that mean it can be a multitude of voices without any one of them being heard coherently?
Well, I think, I mean, one of the positives of the movement is that you have, you know, many, many different strands of opinion. And definitely from the point of view of the Socialist Party does not want to, you know...
to hijack it or anything
this movement to become the Socialist Party, whatever. We're in favour of building the Socialist Party and the United Left Alliance as a new mass workers' party, but we're also in favour of building broad movements that allow people who don't agree with the Socialist Party or don't agree with other political parties of the left or don't agree with any parties, that is the case for most of the people,
to work together anyway.
Space for those people to work together in a campaign, and the campaign has to be much, much broader than, you know, any one political party. That's the nature of a movement, and that's what we're in favour of. I think certainly, I mean, you know, the structures are being worked upon to try and give. And I don't think it's not a matter of creating a centralised leadership, but it is a matter of creating a forum whereby decisions can be made and so on. But I mean,
or a strong voice can be heard anyway.
Yeah, but big steps are being taken. I mean, I'd be very, very positive. You have two assemblies on a daily basis at 1 o'clock and at 6 o'clock at the Central Bank on Dame Street, whereby people discuss and decisions are made about what to do. And I think within that process, there is a discussion about, well, how exactly do we take decisions? The idea of consensus, the idea of voting, those things are being debated and discussed at the moment. And I think that's positive, and it'll naturally take an amount of time. You know, people need space and time to be able to consider things and to discuss together and to decide how is this movement going to be structured. But on the whole, I mean, it's an incredibly positive experience. And the fact that, you know, these people. In fact, you had 1,000 people on the streets. The vast majority of whom I felt were fresh people who haven't, you know, don't have a tradition of being involved in lots of protests.
They're not jaundiced yet. They're not jaundiced. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
I think there was a call made on Saturday. What was agreed at the assembly on Saturday is that there'd be another demonstration, same time, same place. So 2 o'clock at the Garden of Remembrance of Parnell Square next Saturday. And
okay.
I think there's a real potential for that to be bigger again, double the size, three times the size, because it's not that necessarily it'll be like lots of postering and leafleting done first, the way a traditional demonstration would be built for, but through social media,
of course.
People talking to their friends. When you have that fresh layer of people who are, you know, inspired by the very positive mood that existed on Saturday, them bringing along another person or two people, I think it does have the potential to grow.
And Paul, just finally, who are the? I mean, you mentioned like that they would seem to be a fresh group of people. Are there any identifiable groups within that mass of people?
The organised left, you know, is present at these protests. There was members of Socialist Party, members of the Worker Solidarity Movement, present on Saturday. Other members of other left organisations.
It's also, I think, a
major tributary for this movement is at the time when you had the Indignados movement in Spain and in Greece, kind of towards the start of the summer, there was the beginnings of that in Ireland. There was a movement called Real Democracy Now, which had an important element of Spanish immigrants involved in it, as well as a layer of Irish people.
They were on a
and those
street
people
for a time,
seem to have formed like a certain core of this as well. And so you have a certain coming together in Ireland of the tradition of the Indignados movement, which is still continuing actually in mainland Europe. And also then partly, I think, because, you know, it's an English language thing as well, that the spread of the Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street, has a resonance for people who are watching this on the news, watching it on YouTube. And so it's kind of a coming together of those two movements, in my opinion.
Sure. Okay, Paul, look, we're going to have to leave it at that. The clock is, as always, against us again. Listen, thanks for taking the time to talk to us this morning. We'll talk again.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.